what's number?
12.
We didn't complete.
Okay. Now, if we go back to verse number 7 in this chapter 10, here Krishna said, he who knows in reality the supreme glory of my manifestation. So there are two Sanskrit words there. One is vibhutim and one is yogam. If you look at the first line of verse 7, there is vibhutim, there is yogam. Yoga means the power of the Lord where everything exists in seed form before manifestation. Everything that has come into manifestation exists in a seed form, and that is called the yogam, or the power of the Lord to manifest everything from a seed, from unmanifest to manifest. That is the power of the Lord, which is called yogam. And vibhuti means that which is manifested, that which we can see, that which we can visualize. In fact, it is the whole creation. Therefore, what Krishna is saying, one who understands my power which lies in unmanifest form, and one who understands this whole world as my manifestation, such a person will unite with me, there is no doubt. Thus, God is there in both unmanifest and manifest form. So now, for us to learn to appreciate the whole world, not only one aspect, but the whole world as a manifestation of the Lord, in the scriptures it is called Vishva Rupa Darshanam. Vishva means the world. So Rupa means the form. The Lord appearing in the form of the world. The whole world is nothing but a form of the Lord. That is called Vishva Rupa Darshanam. The Lord whose body is the very universe itself. So what is the advantage for such a devotee of Lord who can worship, who can appreciate Lord appearing as the whole world? What is the advantage? Ego is gone. What is the greatest advantage? You don't have to go to a temple to worship Lord, isn't it? You can worship Lord in anything in creation. That is the greatest advantage for such a devotee, that God is never out of his sight, so he can appreciate the Lord everywhere. But as we know, that is only the secondary stage. Then one has got to go to the higher stage to understand that beyond this manifestation is the unmanifest God. So what we are now looking at is the intermediary stage, what we call the Virat Bhakti or Vishva Rupa Bhakti. So now, Lord said, for such a bhakta, a Virat Bhakta or Vishva Rupa Bhakta, who has come to appreciate me in the entire creation, he says, I will take them from that stage to the higher stage, which is Nirguna Bhakti. So our first goal is how to become a Virat or Vishva Rupa Bhakta. So up to now, verse 11, Lord has completed talking about this, how he appears right from the beginning of creation, how he is in this creation. Now, in this verse, starting from verse 12, all the way up to verse number 18, Arjuna now wants to make a request to the Lord. But before he makes a request, he wants to pay his salutations and prostrations to the Lord. So first he humbly approaches the Lord and salutes and prostrates and glorifies him. And how does he do that? He says, you are the Param Brahma. In verse number 12, he addresses Lord as the Param Brahma. Param Brahma, which means you are the supreme Nirguna Brahma. Arjuna has come to understand that the one who is standing in front of him is not an ordinary mortal, but there is something supreme. So he addresses Lord as Param Brahma, Nirguna Brahma. although you are appearing in front of me as Saguna Ishvara, but yet I understand you to be the Nirguna Brahma. And what else? You are Param Dhamma. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. Dhamma means a refuge or an abode. So you are the ultimate refuge of everybody. Everything rests in you, because the whole creation came from Lord. That means the whole creation was existing in Lord. And refuge also, we can understand that when everything else fails, what is the most ultimate refuge? It is the Lord. So Lord, you are the ultimate refuge, Param Dhamma. You are also the Paramam Pavitram. Pavitram means which that is pure, sacred. And why do we call Lord sacred? Why do we call Lord Pavitram? Sorry? Absolute perfect, no gunas. Why do you call him pure? Paramam Pavitram. He is the sanctifier. Because when anything comes in association with the Lord, it becomes pure. Just like if you take a fruit and keep it at the altar, it becomes prasadam. And the same way, when we invoke the deity, when we install a deity in our house, the prayer room, it becomes sacred. Why? Because of the very presence of the Lord itself. So anything that is associated with the Lord, even a human being, when he is the most closest to the Lord, what do we call it? Mahatma or saints. Why? Because he is the most closest to the Lord. Therefore, Lord is the greatest purifier or sanctifier. Then he addresses, now all these names that Arjuna is using are names he has heard before. It is not that suddenly he has become knowledgeable. So obviously Arjuna has heard from various sages, various saints, and he has some idea about this Supreme Lord. So he is merely saying what he has heard before. So he says, now Lord, you are also the Purusham. Purusha here, the word Purusha has got two words. Puru means body. Sha means residing in the body, the one who resides in the body. That means what? You are the very weakness consciousness. In everybody, you are the weakness consciousness. So that is Purusha, the indweller, the self. Then he also addresses Lord as Shashvatam. Shashvatam means you are the eternal one. You are the infinite. Why? Because Purusha means he is residing in the body. But we should not mistake that when the body dies, the Purusha does not die. The Purusha remains eternal, changeless. So he says Purusha, immediately he says also Shashvatam. No doubt you reside in the body, you are the weakness, but yet when the body dies, you remain Shashvatam, you remain eternal, changeless. And he goes on now. Such a long list he is going to address the Lord, because he has got a very important request to make. So first he has to pay his respects. What else? He addresses the Lord as Divyam. Divyam means divine, meaning pure consciousness that gives effulgence to everything. Later on in chapter 15, Krishna will say, I am the effulgence of the sun, I am the effulgence of the moon, I am the effulgence of the fire. Everything that has natural effulgence actually gains its light from the Lord itself. So he is Divyam. Then his address is Adi Devam. Adi Deva means before all the Devas came into existence, you were the first Deva. You are the primeval Deva. Then all the other Devas came after you. Now here again must be very careful, he is not addressing Krishna as Krishna form. He is addressing who? As Brahman. That's why he started first by saying, Param Brahma, you are Brahman. So that is what he is addressing, not this Krishna form in front of him. So Adi Devam, you the Brahman, came before all the Devas came. even before Lord Brahma came, also you existed before Lord Brahma also, because he is the one who created Lord Brahma. Thus you are Ajam. Ajam means you are birthless. Because if we say he came in the beginning, the next question will be what? Who created him? So then he qualifies that by saying, no, you are Ajam, you are birthless. There is no cause for your birth. Ajam, you are birthless, causeless cause. And you are Vibhum. Vibhum means omnipresent. You are the all-pervading one. So in various ways now he has addressed the Lord. And obviously we want to know, how does he know all this? Where did he hear all these terms from? So in the very next verse he says what? Verse 13. Sarve Rishaya Ahu. Arjuna says, this is what I have heard from the who? From the Sarve Rishaya, from all the rishis. Whichever rishis I have met who have given me this knowledge and spoken about the highest Brahman, this is what I have heard from them. And I am repeating. It is not that he is a very knowledgeable person. He is merely repeating what he has heard. From who? Ahu means they say. Who are they? Sarve Rishaya, the great sages, the great rishis have declared your highest nature to be all this Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, etc., etc. And here the word Rishaya means does not only mean those who wear orange robes and have long beard and hair, but Rishaya here means one who has a supreme knowledge. So not everybody who wears an orange robe and sits in ashram is a rishi, but one who has a pure mind, who is an enlightened person, who has the supreme knowledge. They are the ones who have given all these descriptions of the highest form of Lord. And then he goes on to pay respects that not only the rishis, he says, but tatha. Tatha means also. Who else? Deva Rishi. Deva Rishi are the divine rishis, the divine sages, who reside in the higher lokas. And some of the names, the Deva Rishis, he mentions here, celestial sages, like Narada. You have heard about Narada. He's not an ordinary sage, because he can travel all the three lokas. So these are known as special or celestial sages. So Deva Rishi, divine sages like Narada, Asito, Devalo, Vyasa. Vyasa also, who is the author of the Mahabharata, also is mentioned here and glorified. So all these are the great sages who have sacrificed their time and their lives to spread the message of God. And Arjuna acknowledges and glorifies that all these sages. And all these sages, they are all mentioned in the Puranas. You can find a lot of stories about all this, especially Narada, who is very popular. So Narada also is declared in Mahabharata, because Narada has been there. He is said to be one of the, what do you call that? Chiranjeevis, who exist through all periods of time. He never dies. So in every yuga, Narada is there. And even in the Mahabharata, there is a quotation from sage Narada. He declares, Lord Krishna is the creator of all the worlds and knower of all feelings. He is the Lord of the Lords of deities and of gods. So again, Arjuna has heard all this from even great sages like Narada also.
Excuse me, this is very interesting point. Vyasa was
writing. He's mentioned
writing name. About himself.
Yeah, correct.
Is this the only place it happens, or it
is? But he's basically writing what Arjuna is saying.
Yeah.
So because Vyasa, we must know, existed at that time, since he is the very author of the Mahabharata. So he also was one of the sage who Arjuna knew about. So what Vyasa is basically mentioning is what Arjuna is saying. And it's not that Vyasa is glorifying himself. Arjuna is mentioning Vyasa's name. Right? So, I'm not sure whether this is the only place. No, there is one more place in chapter 11 when Vyasa will be mentioned again. Right? So all these great celestial sages also say the same thing, what he is expressing his love and adoration and devotion to God. And not only that, so he's mentioned already the sages he has mentioned the celestial sages, then he also says, Swayam cha eva bravishi me. Swayam eva, and you yourself, Lord. It is not only, I am only depending on the sages and saints, but you yourself also have told me about your own glories. I have listened directly from you. Where is that? In chapter 7, in chapter 9, also Krishna spoke about his divine glories also. So Arjuna saying, I also recognize that you also yourself have told me about your divine glories. And now we go to verse number 14. And now upon hearing all this, what is Arjuna's conclusion? He says in verse 14, Etat sarvam rite. Etat, whatever I've heard so far, either from you, Krishna, or from the celestial sages, whatever I've heard, I hold that to be, ritam means I hold that to be true. I believe everything that I've heard. So he's not doubting, he is accepting everything he has heard from the sages, whatever he's heard from the scriptures, whatever he's heard from Krishna, he says, I believe everything to be the truth, ritam. And he says, Mam vadati keshava, you yourself have told me the same thing, I accept everything as the gospel truth, I accept it. And why is it that I am accepting what you are told? You have told me about your divine glories? He says, He Bhagavan na deva danava te vyaktim na vidu. Na vidu means they do not know. Who else but you only will know your true divine glories? Because why? You came before the whole creation. So only you can tell me, neither the devas meaning the gods, nor Danavas are the demons. So neither the gods nor the demons know your vyaktim, your glories. Who better than you than to tell me about your glories? And since you have this infinite knowledge, because Arjuna is going to make a request now, so he is basically praising the Lord. So again, he carries on with his salutations in verse number 15. Again here he addresses Lord Krishna as Purushottama. So again the word Purushottama in verse number 15, there are two words, there is Uttama and there is Purusha. You and me are called the Purushas, but only Lord can be called the Purusha Uttama, the most supreme being. So again, Lord is addressed as the supreme person. And what else are you? Bhuta Bhavana. Bhuta means of all the things, all the beings of the entire universe. You are the Bhavana, you are the very creator. You are the origin of this whole creation. And not only you are the origin of creation, because anybody can create, but he says you are also Bhutesha. You are also the one who, controls this whole creation, keeps the whole creation in order, that is Bhutesha. Then you are also Deva Deva, two times repeated. Deva Deva means you are the devas of all the devas. Among whatever devas I know, you are the supreme Deva, Deva Deva, Deva of all the devas. And Jagat Pate, you are the, Jagat means the world, Pate means you are the protector of the world. And how does the Lord protect the world? How does He protect the world? You remember chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. How does He protect the world? He told us in chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, the very famous verses. Whoever violates dharma, he takes care of them. And whoever supports dharma, he supports them. So that's how he maintains the protection of the whole creation. So, you are the Jagat Pate. So through all these names that he has mentioned here, Purushottama, Bhuta Bhavana, Bhutesha, Deva Deva, Jagat Pate, it covers the entire creation. Purushottama, you are the supreme being. Bhuta Bhavana, you are the origin of all beings. Bhutesha, you are the sustainer of all beings. Deva Deva, you are the origin of all devas. Jagatpate, you are the sustainer or the protector of this whole world. So in short, what he is trying to say through this beautiful prayer, in short, everything you are. Everything you are. And therefore he says, since you are everything, who better than you to tell me your own glories? Swayam eva atmana, atmanam vetha. Swayam, you yourself, know your own real nature. Because nobody knows God's origin, nobody knows God's nature. So he says, you yourself, vetha, you only know your own nature. As you are both the manifest and unmanifest. So, now he carries on to make the request to Lord Krishna in verse number 16. Up to verse 16 he has paid his salutations. Now he wants to make a request to Lord Krishna. So he says now, Vaktum Arhasi. In the first line you can see Vaktum Arhasi. Arhasi means you should. You should what? Vaktum, you should speak. You should. Now it's a very humble way of asking. He's not saying, I want you to tell me. He's saying, you should give me some knowledge. So it's a very humble way of requesting. Vaktum Arhasi. You should speak to me. About what? Atma Vibhutaya. Atma means your own. Vibhutaya means your manifestations. Vibhutis. Your various manifestations. All your glories. And what type of glories does Arjuna want to hear? Divyam. Glories which are not ordinary, but which are extraordinary. Divine glories he wants to hear, not just ordinary glories. And these glories, Arjuna says, which I want to hear, the divine glories, Yavir Tvam Imam Lokam Vyapa Tishtati. Tishtati means Vyapa means how with these glories you pervade the whole world, the glories which are available throughout the whole world, which are manifest in each and every corner of the world. So these extraordinary glories, Arjuna is asking for a list of all these glories in creation. Not just which is found in one place in creation, but everywhere in creation. And he carries on in verse number 17. Why he wants to ask for this list of glories? This is a very important factor. Why ask for a list of all the glorious manifestations of Lord? Now, the important thing is, because we want to keep remembering God as much as we can, as often as we can, all the time. So if we know the divine glories of Lord manifesting in the universe, that means what? Our thoughts can be fixed on God continuously. This is the advantage. To understand that the sun is His glory, the moon is His glory, the rain is His glory, everything in nature is His glory. Once we understand that, we can appreciate, we can worship Lord at any time in our day also. Not necessary until we come to the temple. So to retain this awareness that God is everywhere, God is everywhere around, we can learn to worship Him through His glorious manifestation. Thus, it is in our culture, we can worship anything and everything in creation. You can worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the cow, whatever you want. Because why? Everything is nothing but a manifestation of the Lord. So now this is what Arjuna requests. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu. Keshu keshu, what, which, bhaveshu, objects, through which objects in creation, glorious objects in creation, it can be an object, it can be a symbol by which I can meditate. And what is the meaning of meditate? Bringing your mind to a single thought. So how can I continuously fix my mind? Meditation is not sitting and closing. In fact, this is meditation with open eyes. Everywhere you look around, you can meditate on God. So it is an open eye meditation. You don't have to close your eyes. So he says, by whichever object in creation, by whatever object I can, sada parichintayam. Sada means always, Parichintayam, I can be engrossed, my thoughts can be thinking about you. Isn't it marvelous? Even when we are driving, we look at the sun, what do you think of? God. It rains, what do you think of? God. Otherwise, you are cursing the heat and you are cursing the rain. So here, it expands our mind to look at everything glorious as a manifestation of God. Whatever we are doing, we are driving, we are cooking, we are walking, whatever we are doing, we can keep our thoughts on God fixed very constantly. That's why it says, Sada Parichintayam, Sada, always, constantly, Parichintam, I can constantly engross my mind on you. And he says, Katham Tvam Aham Vidyam Yogi. So Katham, tell me how, Aham, I will come to Vidyam, to know you, meaning eventually how will I, if I know you in creation, then tell me how will I come to know you in your higher nature, which is the unmanifest nature. So from Saguna Ishvara to Nirguna Ishvara, your higher nature. And in all the Upanishads, in fact, especially in the one of the Upanishads called the Mundaka Upanishad, a very glorious description of the Lord as the world is given. In that Mundaka Upanishad, it says you can worship the Lord as the world, meaning the prayer there is given, your head is Agni, fire is Agni. So fire represents head. Wherever I see fire is your head. Your eyes, which are the eyes of the Lord? If fire represents his head, the sun and the moon represent his two eyes. So daytime we see the sun, we remember God. Nighttime the sun is not there, we see the moon, we also remember God. The sun and the moon represent his eyes. His ears are the various directions, north, south, east, west. Because why? He is omnipresent, he is everywhere. He hears everything, he knows everything. So the directions are his ears. His organs of speech, Lord has the organs of speech, which are the Vedas, the four Vedas. So that means we can worship him also by study of the scriptures. By studying the scriptures, we are worshipping the very words of the Lord, whose breath is the... What is Lord's breath? The air or the wind, that is Lord's breath. Imagine everything in the world is manifestation of Lord. So even the air or the wind around us is the very breath of the Lord. Okay? So tomorrow if the wind blows and blows your hair aside and all, what do you do then? Don't complain, my hair is all dusty because of the wind. Appreciate that also is a glory and a manifestation of the Lord.
And what when the wind doesn't blow and it's
hot, when it's still? See, that means he is moving and non-moving. He is both. Later he will say in chapter 13. I am moving and non-moving also. Both I am. And his feet, where are his feet? Where are his feet? Very earth is his feet. See? So the head is his sky, the earth is his feet. The directions are his ears. Sun and moon are his eyes. Can you see the whole appearance? In fact, today somebody sent out a very nice WhatsApp where they showed how the temple is actually a human being lying down. Right? So the whole depiction of a temple is a human being. Exactly the whole depiction of the world is nothing but the form of Lord also. So that's said in the Mundaka Upanishad. Okay, so now here this is what Arjuna is making a request. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyo. I can think, I can meditate on you, Bhagavan, O Lord. So give me various objects. And objects, we also must understand there are two types. When we talk about objects, Lord can be symbolically represented in two ways. In the scriptures it is mentioned. One is called Pratima. Pratima means a human form. So Rama, Krishna, Devi, human form can also represent that manifestation of the God. That is called Pratima. The second type is called Pratika, P-R-A-T-I-K-A, which means there is no human form, but there is a symbol like Shiva Lingam, Om symbol, all this or fire, all these also are representation of God. So God can be represented through a human form or through a symbol also. Pratima and Pratika also. And this is what Arjuna is saying. Whichever way you are manifest in this world, please tell me, give me some examples on which I can fix my mind and expand my devotion to you. And how does he address Lord Krishna in verse number 18? Very beautiful name of Krishna here, given in the second line, verse number 18. Janardana. You would have heard this name when you sing bhajan, Janardana. What does Janardana mean? Two words again. Jana means people. So people who go to Lord for what purpose? Ardana. Ardana, to worship. And when we worship, what do? We ask for something. So Janardana is the one whom people go to worship and ask for something. So what is Arjuna trying to tell Krishna by addressing him as Janardana? I also got something to ask you also. That's why I am also addressing you as Janardana. Because so many people go worship and ask you. I also worshipping you now. Now it's time for me to ask you for something. And what is that? Kathaya Atmana Yogam Vibhutim. Kathaya, please narrate to me. What? Atmana, your own vibhuti, your own manifestations. Please give me a list. Narrate to me all your potential manifestations. And he doesn't want to hear one or two. He's so thirsty to hear. So what does he say? Vistarena, exhaustively. Give me a long list of manifestations. That's why chapter 10 is quite long. 55 verses. 42 verses, and then it will carry on to chapter 11, which is also a very long chapter. So Vistarena, I want an exhaustive list for you to give me an exhaustive list of your manifestations. Now, why does he want an exhaustive list? Also, he says that Srinvata, while hearing Amritam na asti tripti, no matter how much I hear also, so far you have told me some in chapter 7, you have told me some in chapter 9, but I am not satiated. I am still hungry to hear more and more of your divine glories. Such is a devotee of Krishna like Arjuna. It is not enough for him to just know a little bit. He wants to know as much of Lord's manifestations as he can. So they are like Amritam, they are like nectar to me. And the scriptures talk about two ways in which we can get happiness, isn't it? What are the two ways? One way is called Vishaya Ananda. Vishaya means what? The objects of the world. They also can give us happiness. It is not that we can hear Amritam only comes from the Lord. But one way of getting happiness is from the world. It's called Vishaya Ananda. And the other is called Atma Ananda. So you have Vishaya Ananda, you have Atma Ananda. The difference is what? You can guess. One is temporary, one is permanent. So what Arjuna is asking for, not Vishaya Ananda, that would lead me to Atma Ananda, internal happiness, permanent happiness. Okay. Now we come to verse number 19. Now Krishna starts to give a list of his divine glories. And there's a very, very long list. Almost 70 old glories are given by Krishna. So now Krishna says, okay, you have saluted to me, you have what you call glorified me, now you have made your request. Now he says, Atma Vibhutaya Te Katayishyami. Te to you, Katayishyami, I shall narrate what? Vibhutaya, all my divine vibhutis, my manifestations, I shall certainly narrate. And what type of vibhutis did Arjuna ask for? Divya, divine. So he says, I will tell you of my extraordinary divine glories. Now, where are all these divine glories? Where are they? They are all in the creation, isn't it? Things that we are seeing every day. It is not that these are some special glories that Krishna is going to bring about. Most of them we have seen, we are experiencing every day in creation. Some we have heard as stories. Some, if you go to temple, you will see this elaborate, what you call, paintings of gods, you know, doing different things. Like you see, like Shiva has got water coming out from his ear. What is that also, which is going to be talked about here also? So many things we see. These are all the divine glories of Lord. It is not that we have not seen them before, but with what type of eye have we seen them? We have seen them with our eye, which is clouded with envy, pride, jealousy, anger, etc., isn't it? Today we remove all this by our ignorance is removed. These impurities are removed. Then the very same world is not going to change. But your vision of the same world now is now different. So what Krishna is telling Arjuna is not something new. It's an everyday things that we are seeing, stories we've read in the Puranas, things we see in the temple. From that alone, he's saying, now have a new vision of everything that you see. From now onwards, anything you see in creation should remind you of the Lord. So he says, I will tell you, but he's saying, Pradhanyataha, I will give you a list of the major glories. He's not going to talk about everything, otherwise these Gita classes will never end. Because why? Everywhere is nothing but God's glories. So he'll say, I'll give you the prominent ones, Pradhanyataha. And why? He says, because Mama Vistarasya Anta Na Asti. Anta means there is no end to my divine glories. Vistarasya, my manifestations are everywhere in the world. If I go on and on and on, there'll be no end. So I will only give you the prominent glories also. So now from verse 20, he now starts narrating his glories, and this narration will go on until verse number 39. So from verse 20 to 39, Krishna will narrate a series of glories. And not all the glories we can understand. Because why are there such a long list of glories? Different people are at different levels of spirituality. Different people realize God in different ways. So when he's giving us such a long list, you will find certain appeal to you, certain make no sense to you, certain don't appeal to you. But it is a very broad list which should satisfy everybody also. And what is the very first glory, he says, the very first vibhuti, Aham Atma Guda Kesha. I am the very essence of life in you. That is my very first manifestation. I am the Atma in you. He addresses Arjuna as Buddha Kesha. So, therefore, what is our first meditation on God now? The very first meditation. How do we fix our mind on God? He says, Aham Atma Buddha Kesha. I am the Atma in you. That is, instead of talking about so many glories outside there, the first glory starts with, he is the very soul or the consciousness. So what is the very first thing that our mind should meditate on now? The very fact that you are alive, that there is life in you, is a very sign of that divinity in you. So the manifestation of divinity in you is because of the very life that you exhibit. Right? So, that you are alive, that you are sentient, that there is a sign of life in you, is a very sign of manifestation of Ishvara. So, once we can understand that the sign of life in me is the manifestation of God, what should be my next thought? If I look at others and I see a sign of life in them, what is that also? It's a manifestation of God. And that's why once we realize this, we can never commit hurt, or we cannot physically or mentally or verbally hurt anybody else. Because why? Everywhere where we see life, it is the manifestation of the Lord. As he says, Aham Atma Guda Kesha. I am the very manifestation of life in every living being. So ahimsa, how can you hurt anything in creation? That is the very first thing. And he addresses Arjuna as Buddha Kesha. Very important. Because what does Buddha Kesha mean? Arjuna was called Buddha Kesha. Buddha means sleep. Tamo Guna, sleep. Isha means one who is the master of sleep. So one who has full control of sleep. So what does he mean here?
One who is
awake. Awake means what?
Aware.
Alert, isn't it? Because why? Now we're going to give a very long list of manifestation. So one who is not alert, one who is not spiritually awake, that person will not be interested to hear all this divine manifestation. So that's why he addresses Arjuna, you have sattvic nature in you, you are alert and awake to my divine manifestation, you have thirst to hear all this. So he addresses Arjuna as Buddha Kesha. Now, first he said, Aham Atma, I am the Atma. Where is this Atma? Aham Atma Sarva Bhuta Asya Stitaha. I am that Atma, that consciousness, Sarva Bhuta, that is in every being, not only in you, Arjuna, but it is also the same consciousness which is in every living thing in creation. Aham Atma, where do I reside? I reside in the what we call here. Ashya here means heart. I reside in the heart. Heart here does not mean the physical heart. It basically means the very, actually most of the time when we say heart, we mean the mind. Because when it is a mind is enlivened, the whole body is also enlivened. Right? We experience everything through the mind. So I am residing in the heart of all living beings. And not only that, Aham Eva Adi, I am the origin, I am the creation of everything, I am the Madhyam, I am the sustainer or the middle of everything, and I am the Anta, I am the one that destroys everything also. So I am the creator, the preserver and the destroyer of all the Bhutas. Simple way to understand, before the pots came into existence, there was clay. While the pots are in existence, clay exists. When the pots are destroyed, clay will continue to exist. So clay is in the beginning, clay is in the middle, clay is at the end of all existence. So that's what Lord is saying here. I am there before creation, I am there now, and I will be there when the creation also is done. That is verse number 20. Now we come to some more glories in verse number 21. And some of these glories now are based on the Puranas. So what this also tells us, that Bhagavad Gita links everything back again to the earlier texts like the Vedas, the Puranas. Later in chapter 15, Krishna will say, I am the author of the Vedas. So even the Vedas, the Gita glorifies the Vedas also. And here now you will see the Gitas glorify the Puranas also. So the next one he says is manifestation. Adhyatmanam Aham Vishnu. Among all the Adityas, who are the Adityas? Now there are said to be in the Puranas 12 Adityas. The 12 Adityas represent the sun in each month. So you find in January the sun is one name, February has got one name, March has got one name. In the 12 months the sun has got 12 different names. Among all the 12 different names of the sun, he says, I am called Vishnu. So one of the 12 names of the sun is also Vishnu also. And that is my glory. Basically he is saying that that glory of the sun is also my manifestation also. And each month there is a different Aditya who shines. For example, sun god as what you call Indra, one name is called Indra also. So one month the sun is called Indra. Indra is who is the enemy of all the Deva, sorry, of all the Asuras. So one month the sun is called Indra. Another month is called Parajanya. Parajanya means that month when there is maximum amount of rain that comes down also. So different months the what you call the Lord is addressed by different name, the Son is addressed by different name. And this is where our 33 devas come in. You remember, I think you all know that they say in Hinduism there are 330 million, but actually all the 330 million come from the original 33 devas. Who are the original 33 devas? They are the main 33 devas, 12 adityas, which we talked about just now, plus 11 rudras. We'll be talking about the rudras. Who are the rudras? So 12 adityas plus 11 rudras plus 8 vasus. Vasus also are going to be mentioned very soon. So that's how much already? 12 plus 11 plus 8? 31. That's total 31 plus Indra 32 plus Prajapati. That's total 33. These are the main 33 devas. From this, all the other devas came out from. So that's why when we do rituals, these are the major 33 devas who are receiving all our oblations. So he says, among all the adityas, I am Vishnu. And then he says, Jyotisam Ravir Amshuman. You look at the second line. Jyotisam Ravir Amshuman. Jyotisam means among everything that is shining, everything that is radiant, I am Ravi. Ravi means the sun. So everything that shines, there is nothing brighter than the sun, which is the most brightest thing in creation. Amshuman. And that's why in the tradition, again going back to the Vedas, we worship sun three times in the day, called Sandhya Vandanam. You are supposed to rise early in the morning for what purpose? So you should rise before or after the sun? Before. So we rise to greet the sun before it rises. So the first time the sun is worshipped is at sunrise. Then the second time of worship on the sun is during the 12 to 2 o'clock, or when the sun is basically at its height. And the third time is when the sun is setting down in the evening. So the Surya Vandanam used to be done three times a day, but nowadays of course nobody has got a time for that. So at least what you can do when you see the sun, anytime throughout the day, worship the sun as a manifestation of the Lord. Now, Marichi Marutam Asmi. Asmi, I am. Who? Among all the Maruts, Marutam, I am Marichi. Now, just now we discussed about the wind, right? So, it is said in our scriptures that there are 49 Maruts. Each Marut represents different type of wind. So, you have a soft breeze, you have a strong wind, you have a hurricane, you have a typhoon, like that. They are said to be 49 different types of winds. And each wind has got one Marut in charge of it. So Krishna says, among all the Maruts, I am that Marut whose the name is called Marichi. And why Marichi? Because Marichi is the Deva who presides over the most cool, the most gentle, the most pleasing wind. So among all the winds, the types of winds, when there is a light breeze, when there is a cool breeze blowing, that also is the manifestation of the Lord by the name of Marichi also. And then he says, Nakshatranam Aham Sashi. Nakshatranam means are all the basically the things that light up the night sky. Nakshatras. Okay? The luminaries. Okay? Okay, among all that that lights up the night sky, I am Sashi. Sashi is the moon. The moon is the most brightest in the night. Among the stars, the planets, the most brilliant one is the moon. Verse number 22. Vedanam Sama Veda Asmi. Asmi, I am among the Vedanam, among the four Vedas, I am the Sama Veda. So among the four Vedas, Krishna says the most glorious one, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Rig Veda, and what was that? Yajur Veda. The most glorious one, which is his manifestation, is the Sama Veda. And why is Sama Veda said to be the glorious among all the four Vedas? Because the Sama Veda is the only Veda that is set to music. it is sung in a very melodious form, whereas the other Vedas are mostly in prose form. So this Samaveda, the hymns are put in very melodious form to be sung. So that's why Krishna says, among all the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Devanam Ashmi Vasava. Among all the Devas, I am Vasava. Who is Vasava? Vasava is no other than Indra, Lord Indra. As we know, Indra is the leader or the head or the chief of all the Devas. So among all the Devas, I am Vasava. And here he is talking about all the celestial Devas, which Indra is the king of all the heavenly Devas. Then he says, Indriyanam Manaha Asmi. I am the, among all the Indriyas, Indriyas means our sense organs, our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, these are the five sense organs. Among all the sense organs, I am the Manaha, I am the mind, because it is the mind that functions through the sense organs. If the mind is not working, the sense organs don't function. So the chief of all the sense organs is the mind. So the glory of the mind to think, the glory of the mind to feel, to express, this is also the manifestation of the Lord also. All the various senses when we experience is experienced from the mind. That also Lord says is my manifestation. And Bhutanam Asmi Chetana. Bhutana means in every living being, I am Chetana. Chetana is the consciousness. So the very fact there is life in earth, the very life is a manifestation of Lord. Because we can't see this Lord. So how do we say that Lord exists? We say Lord expresses as the very life in His creation. That's how we can know about His existence also. Now, verse number 23. So earlier I told you about the 33 Devas. There were the 12 Vasus. Now he's talking about the Rudras. So what about the Rudras? He says, Rudranam Sankara Ashmi. So there are 11 Rudras which are mentioned in our scriptures. So among all the Rudras, he says, I am Shankara. Now what do the Rudras do actually? The Rudras in our body represent the 10 senses plus the mind. Now what are the 10 senses? Earlier we talked about the eyes, nose, ear, skin, taste. Apart from that 5 senses, there are also the organ of action, the hands, the legs, organ of speech, and organ of reproduction, and organ of excretion. So these are the 10 senses plus the mind. The total 11 are called the Rudras. Now, why are they called the Rudras? The Rudras also mean the howling ones. Now, why are they called the howling ones? Because when the 10 senses and the mind leave the body, what happens to the body? At the time of death, the 10 senses and the mind leave. That is what he is going to tell us in chapter 15. The 10 senses and the mind leaves the body. What happens when the senses and the mind leave the body? There is death. When there is death, everybody cries. So that's why the Rudras are called the howling ones. When they depart, people cry for their loved ones. So they make people cry. And thus, among all the 11 which are called the Rudras, which control our senses and our mind, Krishna says, I am Shankara. Shankara is because he is the most auspicious. The word Shankara itself means, sun means Mangalam, which is auspicious. Kara means Karta, the one who does. So the one who does all auspicious things is called Shankara. So all the 11 Rudras have a name. One of the Rudras is called Shankara, and Krishna says, I am the Shankara among all the 11 Rudras. Vitesha Yaksha Rakshasam. Another group of Devas were called Rakshas, the demons. And this, here is talking about Yakshas and Rakshas, there are two. Yakshas stay in heaven, Rakshas stay in the hell. So Yaksha with a Y, they are a group of good-natured spirits. They are in charge of all the buried treasures underground. All the gold, diamond, rubies. They are the ones who are the devas who are in charge of all this. So Krishna says, among all these yakshas, I am Vitesha. Who is Vitesha? Vitesha is another name for Kubera. As you know, Kubera is depicted with a very big stomach, very demonous looking person. Because, so why is Kubera depicted with a very big stomach and he looks very demonic type actually? In fact, he is also part of the demons, the Rakshas. So why in our scriptures, Kubera, who is supposed to be the god of wealth, all the treasures are under him, yet he is depicted as a very demonic type of creature? Huh?
Half brother of Ravana.
Oh, he is depicted as a very ferocious looking creature by our scriptures. The reason being that because it is told to us in an indirect way, those who pursue wealth are basically like him. They are horrendous looking people. You end up becoming demonic. So, although he is the god of wealth, but he is projected in a very horrendous way. So, that means all of us who thirst for gold, who thirst for all the wealth, we actually end up being very demonic. But yet, Krishna says, among all these yakshas and the rakshas, the demons and the yakshas, I am Kubera. So, even that also is one glory of the Lord. Vasunam Pavakas Asmi. As I said earlier, again, among the 33 devas, you have the 12 Adityas, 11 Rudras. Now he's talking about the Vasus. There are said to be 8 Vasus. Who are the 8 Vasus? Prithivi, earth, Agni, fire, Vayu, wind, Antariksha is the space between earth and heaven. That space is called Antariksha. Aditya is the sun, Dhyayus is the sky, Chandrama is the moon, and Nakshatran are the stars. So among the 8 Vasus, I am Pavaka. Pavaka is Agni or fire. So fire is one of the 8 Vasus. And why is Lord saying that my glory is in Agni? Because Agni is the greatest purifier. Whenever we want to purify anything, when you want to purify your food, what do? You heat it. You want to purify your water, what do? You heat it. So fire becomes the very purifier. Even when we want to cremate a body, what do? We also use fire to cremate, to purify the body. So for all sacrificial purposes, we light fires. Is a symbol of purity also. So Lord says, in among all the Vasus, I am Pavaka, which represents fire. Meru Sikari Nam Aham. Verse number 23, the last one. Sikarina means among all the mountains with peaks, not very high mountains, but those smaller mountains, I am Meru, the name of Meru. Now Meru is said to be a very mythological mountain that exists in our scriptures, and it is said that Meru is the center of the earth where all the stars, the sun circulate around this Meru mountain. Very, very strange incline. There is actually a place called Meru. You know, Jalan Meru. I don't know where the name came from, right? So Meru is a very sacred mountain which is said to be where all the stars, the sun, everything circulates around this Meru. They use a Meru mountain, exactly. In the churning of the ocean, the Meru mountain was used. And some things will be talked about also in the churning of the ocean.
What is Rudraksha?
Huh? Rudraksha, the beads, you know, that we wear. Rudraksha beads, which are... The top one is called Meru, which we meditate on. We used to meditate on the Rudraksha.
Is there a connection between Rudraksha and...
It is said to come from that tree, which is supposed to be a symbol of, again, Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva. Rudraksha. So Rudra, also, there's a connection there. Okay. Then verse number 24. Partha Vidhi, Partha Arjuna, know me as Puro Dasham Mukhyam Brihaspati. So Purohits, Puro Dasham means are the Vedic priests. There are two type of priests. One priest which are on earth, there are another type of priests which are in the heavens. So here he is talking about the priest which is in the heaven. Purodasham, among the priests, Mukhyam, the most chief among all the priests is Brihaspatim. So that you have heard his name Brihaspatim also. He is also propitiated during prayers also, because he is said to be the main chief priest in heaven. So all the devas, when they want to do puja, they have to go to Brihaspati also. He is the main priest for all the devas also. The priest of all the devas is called Brihaspatim, and Brihaspatim again is the glory or the manifestation of the Lord. Sena Ninam. And yeah, one more thing. Brihaspatim is also the guru of all the devas. So that's why Brihaspatim is worshipped on Thursdays. That's why normally most spiritual classes are held on Thursdays. It's a sign of worship of the gurus also. And what is Thursday called in Hindi?
Brihaspati.
So the word Brihaspati also appears there, and he is associated with Thursday also, right? So worship of Brihaspati on Thursday, and that's why many spiritual classes are conducted on Thursdays. That's why we started the Gita class on every Thursday in Gita Ashram also. Sena Ninam Aham Skandaha. Skanda, you know who Skanda? Murga is known as Murga, Subramanyam, Kartikeya, one of the sons of Lord Shiva. So he says, among all the Sena Ninam, who was Skanda? Skanda was a great commander of armies. So here he is saying, among all the commander of armies, I am to be known as Skandaha. The glory of Skandaha is my manifestation. And Skanda is described, in fact, he has his own Purana. Among all the 18 Puranas, there is one Purana called Skanda Purana. And what is the glory of the Skanda Purana? It is among all the Puranas, the most longest Purana. You know how many verses? Other Puranas have got 9,000 verses, 12,000 verses, 18,000 verses, 24,000 verses. This one has got 81,000 verses. So among all the 18 Puranas, Skanda Purana is the most biggest Purana, longest Purana. And even when we recite Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu, one of the names is also Skanda. So Skanda has got a very glorious, name there. One of the names of Vishnu also is Skanda. Sarasam, now this is a very interesting story here. Sarasam Ashmi Sagara. Sarasam means among the all the large bodies of water, wherever you find huge pools of water, I am Sagara, the ocean. So in Sanskrit or Hindi, we call the ocean as Sagara. Now there's a reason why the ocean has been given the name Sagara, because it is said the ocean was dug. In the beginning, before creation, there was no ocean. The ocean was dug by the sons of Sagara. And these stories are told in the Puranas. So there was a king called Sagara, and he had 60,001 children. Now don't ask me how he got 60,001 children. These are stories in the Puranas. Okay? So there was a king called Sagara who had all the 60,001 children, and thus they were called Sagara Putra. Now, one of the sons was called Asammanja. Okay? So forget about all the other 60,000 names, just think about this Asammanja. Okay? Now this Sagara Raja, he wanted to perform what is known as an Ashwamedha Yaga. Ashwamedha Yaga was performed in kings in those days, where they let a horse loose, and wherever the horse ran to any kingdom, it was accompanied by the king's soldiers. When it reached that kingdom, the king of that kingdom was supposed to catch the horse and challenge the soldiers. If the king could not capture the horse and challenge the soldiers, he had to surrender his whole kingdom to the king from where the horse came from. Okay? So Ashwamedha Yaga was done by this king called Sagara. Now while he was performing this, Indra, who was sitting in the heaven, he got very worried. Why did he get worried? He saw this king performing Ashwamedha Yaga. He got very worried. because it is said that those who perform the Ashwamedha Yaga successfully, they will topple Indra, he will lose his post and that person will become Indra. So he got very worried. What did he do? He went and captured the horse, and where did he take him? He took him right underground, right below the ground, and he hid the horse there, where Kapila Muni was sitting down and doing meditation. So he hid the horse there and Indra nicely ran away. So now the son, the king sent the 60,000 sons to go and look for the horse. The one son didn't go. Okay? 60,000 sons went. And they found the horse. They went down to Patal Loka where Kapila Muni was doing meditation. They found, so they started digging, and that eventually became the ocean. That's how the word Sagara, the word ocean came. Because the 60,000 sons kept on digging to reach Patal Loka, it all became filled with water. Now when they reached Patal Loka, they saw the horse was tied next to Kapila Muni. So what did they think? That Kapila Muni stole their horse. So they shouted at him. Kapila Muni opened his eyes. Because he was in meditation, there was such intense radiation, he burnt all the 60,000 sons to ashes. So now the king was waiting. 60,000 sons didn't come back, horse also didn't come back. So what did he do? He sent Asamanja to go and look for the sons. Asamanja came, he saw, finally he found that all were burnt to ashes. And he asked Kapila Muni, why did you burn them to ashes? He said, because they disturbed my meditation. So he said, now how am I going to revive them? He said, only one way. You have to invoke Ganges from the heavens to come to earth. So Ganges was not on earth, it was originally in the heavens. So Asamanja now did meditation to invoke Mother Ganges to come down to earth and bless all the 60,000 brothers of his so they can come to life. So he did meditation, but he was not successful. Then his son Amshuman also did meditation, also not successful. Finally came his son, Amshuman's son called Bhagiratha. Now you must have heard of Bhagiratha, a very common name of a sage also. He did tapas and finally he succeeded in getting Ganga Devi to come down to earth. So she started flowing from the heavens, she started flowing. But the problem was, the flow was so strong that nothing could stop it. So finally Bhagiratha had to invoke Lord Shiva to come and trap the Ganga in his locks, in his hairs. So Shiva did that, he trapped it. But he refused to let Ganga go now. Now came second problem. Because Bhagiratha wanted the water to go down to Patal Loka, but Lord Shiva was very upset. He said, this Ganges is very proud. She thinks that she is very mighty, but look, I've trapped her in my locks. So again Bhagiratha did some more penance. He said, Lord Shiva, please release some of the Ganges water to save my brothers. So that's why the Ganges came out from Lord Shiva's head. So this is a story that goes back in the Puranas. Then Lord Shiva released the waters of the Ganges from his locks. Now, there is also an allegorical meaning behind this. When the Ganges water was released from Lord Shiva's hair down to earth, what is the allegorical meaning behind this? There is a symbolical meaning. It's not just we look at that, we see Lord Shiva's hair with all the water coming out. There is also a meaning behind that. What is the meaning you're supposed to understand from that? That Lord Shiva released the Ganges water from his locks right down to earth. Now what does Ganga Devi represent? What does Ganga Devi represent? What is life? Ganga Devi actually represents Brahma Vidya knowledge. Knowledge. That's why they say take a dip in Ganga, wash away your sins. Means what? Not wash away your sins, means wash away the sins from your dirty mind with knowledge. So Ganga Devi is supposed to represent Brahma Vidya knowledge. So when Ganga Devi comes from Shiva's head, it is to indicate that this knowledge which we have now has come from the wisdom of the Lord. It came from the head of Shiva. So the water flowed from the head of Shiva is symbolically to represent that Ganga Devi is a knowledge which came from the very Lord himself. Okay? So that's a symbolical meaning. So just like knowledge can give us immortality, Ganga also can give us immortality also. Right? Now, as the river flowed down to earth now, came another problem. This Ganges river was flowing down. Before it reached Patal Loka, it flowed through Janu Maharishi's ashram. That's why Ganga has got another name. It is also called, there's another name later will come, where it will say that what happened is the Ganga flowed through Maharishi Janu's ashram and it flooded his whole ashram. So he got so angry, he also trapped the whole Ganga in his ears. Then Bhagiratha had another problem because he wanted the water to reach hell. So now he had to do tapas and beg Janu Maharishi to let go the Ganges from his ears. So the Ganges flowed out through Janu Maharishi's ears and finally it flowed all the way down to hell and it rescued the 60,000 sons of, purified the 60,000 sons of the king and they came back to life. Now, again, there is another allegorical meaning. In later on in chapter 10 verse 31, Krishna will say, among all the rivers I am Janavi. So, why the Ganges river is also called Janavi? Because it came from the ears of Maharishi Janu, the sage Janu. So, that's why Ganges is also called Janavi. Now, again, what is the allegorical meaning behind this? When we say the Ganges came out of the ears of the Rishi. First, the knowledge came from Lord. Okay? Now, it's come from the ears of the Rishi. So, the symbolical meaning is that this knowledge must be imparted from guru to disciple. It is a process of imparting knowledge from guru to disciple. So, all these are very symbolic. We must not just read the story and get lost in the story. We must try to understand the symbolic meaning behind the stories. So, the Ganges water coming out of Janu Maharishi's ears is to symbolize that the knowledge flowed down to earth, which is transmission from guru to Sishya also. And finally, Ganga Devi came to Patal Loka and saved all the 60,000 sons. And that's how the ocean god is named Sagara, and that is how the Ganges also came down from heavens right down to earth also. Verse 25. Maharshinam Bhrigu Aham. So there are the seven great Maharishis which we were told in chapter 10, the earlier part of chapter 10, when Lord said the first thing I created were the seven Maharishis. So among all the seven Maharishis, Krishna says, I am Bhrigu. And Bhrigu also has got a very nice story behind him. It seems that Bhrigu wanted to test among Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, who was the mightiest. So among these three Murtis, Bhrigu wanted to test who was the most mightiest. So first he went and he made Brahma very angry. He did something to make Brahma angry. Brahma got very angry and cursed him. So he said, you are not so mighty now. Then he went to Shiva. He went and disturbed Shiva also, made him angry. Shiva also cursed him. So he said, he told Shiva, you also not so great now. Then he went to Vishnu. He went and insulted Vishnu. You know how he insulted Vishnu? Again, very symbolic. You go to temple. If you see the form of Vishnu, you will see a footmark on his chest. You notice that? So, Bhrigu Maharaj kicked Vishnu on the chest and the imprint was on the chest. So, when Vishnu was kicked by Bhrigu, what did Vishnu do? Earlier, Brahma was kicked, he got angry, he cursed him. Shiva was kicked, he got angry, he cursed him. When Vishnu was kicked, what did he do? He said, does your foot hurt or not? He was more concerned about Bhrigu's foot, you know. He was not angry. So then Bhrigu said, you are the greatest among all the three. So it's very symbolic, this kick that we see or the footprints that we see on the chest of Vishnu is called Sri Vatsa. There's a name for it. It's called Sri Vatsa, V-A-T-S-A. So this chest print that we see. So again, all the stories coming from the Puranas also, and that's why Vishnu. That's why they say. In fact, he went back and apologized to Brahma and apologized to Shiva also. He said he just wanted to test them, and that's why among all the three, they always place Vishnu above Brahma and Shiva also. And another interesting thing about Bhrigu is all the textbooks of astrology have come from Bhrigu Samhita. So all the astrologers refer to a textbook which is called Bhrigu Samhita, where he has made the what you call the horoscopes of all the people in earth. All these horoscopes are recorded in Bhrigu Samhita. Any human being's horoscope can be found in one of these horoscopes. So Bhrigu is also known as the main devta or the god of astrology also. Right? So that is okay. Then the next one is Giram Ashmi Ekam Aksharam. Giram means among all the utterances, whatever we speak, whatever words we speak, I am Ekam, I am the single syllable Aksharam, which you can guess it is the symbol Om or Omkara. So our utterance of Om is the most, is the very manifestation of the Lord. Every time we utter Om is the very manifestation of the Lord, the single syllable Om. And thus, that's why we can use it to meditate on the Lord. Yajnanam japa yajnosmi. Among all the religious sadhanas that we do, many types of sadhanas that we do, the most highest among all the sadhanas, Krishna is saying, I am japa yajna. Japa yajna means recitation of the names of the Lord. That is called japa yajna. Now, why is japa yajna considered the most superior among all yajnas? There are a few reasons behind this. First is, it is the only yajna that can be practiced without any limitations. So whether you are a householder, you are a brahmachari, you are a vanaprastha, whatever stage of life, you are man, you are woman, there is no restriction. Whereas some prayers, some rituals, there are certain restrictions. Only householders can do, only brahmacharis can do, only men can do. There are all these kind of restrictions. But japa yajna is open. It can be done by anybody. There are no restrictions. Second advantage with japa yajna, it can be done at any time or place. There are many rituals we have to face a certain direction, there are certain timings to do, certain days you can do, certain days you cannot do. But japa yajna is 365 days a year. You can do it at any time, any place. Right? Third advantage, the best advantage. What is the best advantage of japa yajna? Yeah, it can be done anywhere, anytime. That was the second advantage. What is the third and the best advantage?
You can do it in your mind.
Yeah, it's called manasa japa. But what is the best advantage is no money required. You don't have to go to temple, you don't have to pay fees to priests, you don't have to buy flowers or anything. All you have to do is just use your mouth and recite. And we are all very experts at using our mouth, so no problem at all. So, fourth advantage
is, then you can do it in your
mouth. Yeah, you can do it mentally. So, either
without using your mouth.
Loud also, you can do it loudly.
Or you can whisper. Do it without using your
mouth. No, you can whisper. You can do it loudly, you can whisper, or you can do it mentally. All three ways also can be done. Fourth advantage, japa yajna is free from defects or injury. Whereas if you do havan yajna, the chances of insects getting killed, wood has got to be chopped, you have to kill some trees also, but japa yajna requires no materials, nothing at all. So there is no injury, there is no harm to anything at all. And thus, Krishna says, among all the yajnas, I am japa yajna. The most, in fact, for Kali Yuga, it has been advised that we should use japa yajna. It is the most easiest and fastest way to fix our mind to the Lord. And I'll finish with the last one here in verse 25. Stavaranam Himalaya. Stavaranam, among all the immovable things which cannot be moved, that is Stavaranam, I am Himalaya. So earlier Krishna talked about the mountains, peak, I am Meru. Now he's talking about the gigantic, the big mountains of that big mountains, I am the Himalaya, the most sacred mountain ranges where Lord Shiva also resides. So now, when we come back next week, we will finish the balance glories from 26 onwards, and then Krishna will conclude the chapter 10 there. So that's why this chapter is called Vibhuti Yoga, where Lord mentions a number of His manifestations or His glories, and we are to understand that we can also look upon His glories and keep our mind fixed on Lord throughout the day also. Okay, you end with the prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Thank you.
This is a short one.
So before or after the dinner?
After
the
dinner.
Finish first and then stay right now.
Put the
rest of the thing back.
Yeah.